I want you to say, that gets my goat.
That get my goat.
Say it mad. That gets my goat.
That get my goat.
So last week, we were talking a lot about...
We were talking about Thor, were we?
We talked a little about Thor and a lot about everything else. And I'm sure we're going to do some more of that right now.
That sounds great.
As we get back into the swing.
I don't know. I think we live in a really interesting time, which I believe is a Chinese curse. And we've got all these geek-centric movies, and when I was a boy, there were the Chris Reeve Superman movies, and that was it.
Yeah.
They would try something else, like a Flash Gordon or a Dune or Helen Slater Supergirl or whatever it is, and they either wouldn't work or they didn't have confidence in them. Like Supergirl was meant to be like a legitimate blockbuster summer movie. And Warner Brothers was just like, they pulled a Warner Brothers, and they removed all the scenes with Christopher Reeve as Superman, welcoming her to Earth and showing her around and all that stuff. And then they slashed the budget, and ultimately they said, yeah, we're not even going to release it. And they gave it to Golden Globus, or they gave it to Orion Pictures, or whoever ultimately made Supergirl, and it's so dirt cheap and I almost want to say half-assed. I don't know. I haven't seen it in so long that I wouldn't have known what half-assed meant when I saw it. But it just sucks when they do that, because you know that if they had put the heart that they put in Superman 3 into Supergirl, that it would be something that Gen Xers and Gen Yers would still revere. But they didn't. It was just like, eh. I mean, they didn't even care about Superman by the fourth movie. That wasn't released by Warner Brothers either, or made by Warner Brothers. That one, that was just like, eh. It's tired and it's stupid and diminishing returns and funny books and all that. It's just so strange that they can be so short-sighted, because
yeah.
Superman was 50 by then. You know what I mean? That's... not just a flash in the pan. That's an icon when they make it that long. And the stuff with Batman, it's like, well, just once a movie isn't a tremendous blockbuster, they're like, eh. That's amazing to me. What was it we were talking about where there was a movie? Oh, I guess it was Star Trek, the Star Trek franchise, and they just turned their back on it. This that made them billions. And then suddenly they're like, it's not in vogue anymore. It's not cool. It probably was never cool. That just shows so much disdain for this cash cow that has lined your pockets for decades. And when License to Kill came out and it wasn't a huge hit, and they're like, Bond, fuck that. You're just like, whoa, dude, by then we were talking like 18, 19, 20 movies.
Yeah.
That I just don't get, man. Sony hasn't shown much more respect for Spider-Man, which made them billions of dollars, where they're just like,
nobody liked Spider-Man 3.
If there was a 2011 with a Sam Raimi Spider-Man 4 that was good in an alternate universe, and I'm sure there is, everybody would be wearing Spider-Man t-shirts right now and buying up the action figures and lining up around the block the day that it comes out. I think it came out this weekend in 2011 in an alternate universe.
Oh, really?
It was this weekend.
There was no Thor.
And Thor was supposed to come out 2 weeks from now. But when Spider-Man vacated the first week in May, Thor said, we'll take it. And I guess I can't understand, because I'm coming from a position of passion and art and motivation and storytelling and an audience perspective maybe. And the others, they're coming from – it's not even a filmmaking perspective.
The money perspective.
These are all conglomerates. And Sony Pictures is just a teeny tiny little leg of their huge Sony empire.
Yeah.
So maybe, honestly, to the stockholders, $1 billion is like, we'll make that this month on cars. We'll make that this month on plasma TVs. We'll make that this month on video game consoles. That kind of thing. To me, $1 billion is incalculable. But to them, it's just like, Spider-Man 3 – only made $300 million domestically, and that's a disappointment. So I guess that was a very roundabout way of saying, I don't know if there will be a Thor 2. I know that they want to do it. I know that all the actors are signed to do a second one. Natalie Portman.
They do that pretty much with every movie these days, don't they? You sign on for something like that.
I would think so, yeah.
And they're going to sign you for a multi-picture deal just in case.
Yeah, that's true. But even Warner Brothers was short-sighted enough not to sign those Harry Potter kids for 7 movies.
That's right. There was a point somewhere in the middle where we were afraid we were going to get a new Ron or a new Harry or something, huh?
And I'm sure it cost them. I think I read somewhere that like the girl that plays Hermione and the girl that plays Ron, the guy, sorry, make like $8 or $9 million for these last ones, which is 80 times what they made for the first one or something like that. And it's just,
it's still unbelievable that's all they're making, considering how much they're making off of those movies.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're each $20 million actors, and it's worth every friggin' dime to see those same people in this film franchise. Things that we've seen in our lifetimes, you know, how Christopher Reeve is Superman. Whatever they paid him wasn't enough. And I don't know how many films they contracted him for. It might have only been the 1.5. Then they had to up the contract and pay him a ton more. And Superman 4, he was executive producer and you know, story by Christopher Reeve and stuff like that. That's what they had to do to get him to do the film. So I think we were just talking about that in an episode that airs next week. Oh. But back to Thor, I thought it was a solid film. How would you rank the 4 Marvel Studios films?
Spider-Man, X-Men, what do you
Marvel mean? Studios.
Oh, 4 more. Oh, okay. Sorry. I was trying to think what the 4 are. I think it would be the second. I would give Iron Man 1 top billing, number 1, as far as that goes.
As would I.
But I think I would put it as second. And then I'm not sure. It's been too long since I saw that Incredible Hulk movie to know where I should put it between it and Iron Man 2.
I would definitely put Incredible Hulk above Iron Man 2. Now, I saw a bit of it on TV just the other day, and the part where in Portuguese he says, "Don't make me hungry. You wouldn't like me when I'm hungry." No, wait, that's not right. Was so cool to me that I was just like, oh my gosh, this movie is so rad. And if I recall, it started out really, really strong, and it just got weaker as the film went along. I think, and it's hard to know. I need to watch it again. But Thor is unique in that it's the first movie from Marvel Studios that doesn't have the origin of the character, and then he runs into a more powerful version of himself that he has to fight at the end.
Yeah.
All 3 of them did that.
Yeah, I think that's true. Wasn't it on Civil War where they made a clone of Thor? Isn't that
right.
What happened?
The Thor clone.
He didn't run into his Thor clone to have to fight him. The more vicious Thor clone that would kill Goliath.
Yeah, it killed Black Goliath. And I'm trying to remember, there was somebody I talked to that was like, Black Goliath, that's nobody. But, you know, it's something that Stan used to say, you know, is that every character is somebody's favorite character. And someday, here, let me make this promise. Someday, I want to talk to you about the death of Gwen Stacy in the comic books. And I don't know if I should do this. I'll do it right now.
The sad music?
That you know where we're going. And I'll say this just as like our coda. There was an episode of Kevin Smith's podcast recently where he was talking about his favorite arc of the Swamp Thing. And he loved this arc, and he was telling his friend that had never read it. And he cried. And he was so moved by telling him this story of Swamp Thing, you know, the love that he had for this woman and the depths that he went to protect her and to save her and redeem her. And I was just like blown away to hear him crying, and he would be silent for a long time because that's one of those podcasts they don't edit. And I thought, gosh, I wonder if I could tell the death of Gwen Stacy story without crying. I bet that I couldn't. But the background behind that was Stan quit writing Amazing Spider-Man and eventually quit writing Fantastic Four. And those were the only 2 books he was left on. And he took a position of like head of Marvel Comics, editor-in-chief kind of thing. And he just sort of supervised everything. And then he was going to go on vacation, his first vacation, since he was in his 20s or whatever. You know what I mean? First vacation since becoming a comic book writer. And while he was on vacation, the writer of Amazing Spider-Man said, yeah, we're going to kill Gwen Stacy. And the editor said, well, we're going to have to clear it with Stan. So I guess they either send him a telegram or they made a call and said, we want to kill Gwen Stacy and the Green Goblin. Is that okay? And Stan's like, I'm getting laid for the first time in all these years. Do whatever you want.
I thought he was having a contest with Mick Jagger.
That's right. To see who could have the most tail.
Up until that point, he was way ahead.
But when he came back, you know, they had killed her, and the outcry was so monumental, and he felt like that was a mistake and that was something they shouldn't have done. And if, you know, he had been at the helm as he had been, that they wouldn't have done that. And they spent years trying to fix that and change that and bring the Green Goblin back and find a way that Spider-Man's greatest villain could somehow be back. And ultimately, yeah, they effed up all of that. And in some ways, it was good to have Norman Osborn come back from the dead because he's such a great villain. But it weakens the power of those stories. And, a lot of people say that's the end of the Silver Age of comics was the death of Gwen Stacy. Oh. I mean, you type the Silver Age in Wikipedia and I'll bet it'll have a reference to that.
Interesting.
Because suddenly everything got dark and morose and the good guy didn't always win. And I mean, just what a giant failure on Peter Parker's part. And yeah, I can feel it climbing. It's right here at my sternum. I will get choked up if I have to talk about how much
I better cut you off now then.
That it wasn't just that the Green Goblin killed Peter's girlfriend, but that Peter inadvertently killed his girlfriend. It's so horrible. Something that Stan would never have allowed, but he dropped his guard and let somebody else do it. And it's one of the greatest comic book stories ever told.
Mm-hmm.
And so, geez, how does this have anything to do with Thor?
I don't know. But did you know, since we're on the end of Silver Age, the death of Bach is what they use as the dividing point between the Baroque and the classical era of music, just to go along with
that. Oh, cool.
It made me think of that. One time I was in my music appreciation class and we watched this video and they were talking about the Baroque era and they, you know, the Baroque era ended in...
They have an exact date.
Yeah, he said, the Baroque era ended in 1725, July 3rd, 1720, you know, just to make a joke because they say, you know, Bach is basically the last of the Baroque composers.
And it's like I always say, if it's not Baroque, don't fix it.
That's right. Now we've come full circle back to Kenneth Branagh and Shakespeare. and we're going to wrap this show up because we're at, what, an hour 20?
This is an extraordinarily long show. But what might be fun is all summer to do That Gets My Goats covering the movies that come out. And we'll just split this up into little parts. And the second this is done, we'll do a Pirates one or we'll do a Green Lantern one or we'll do a Captain America one or we'll do a Harry Potter 8 one. And it'll just, you know, be a long go to the movies with Big and Rish during the whole summer. What do you think?
That sounds good to me.
And so by the time they're listening to this, whatever it is has already come and gone. And next week we'll be talking about that.
Yeah. Do we have to give thumbs up or down for Thor?
Oh, I give Thor way thumbs up.
I give it thumbs up too.
Really?
Do we give it? No, we each give one thumb and then combined makes it two thumbs up, right?
I believe Roger Ebert owns the trademark on that, so I don't think we'll do that. Plus, I really love Roger Ebert.
I had an erection for this one.
It was good. I think we could talk for another half hour about it because we haven't really talked that much about the movie. And, I liked this part and I liked this character.
Meandered but so far off.
There was one thing I really did want to talk to you about, and I don't know if you want me to put this earlier in the episode. But the Kat Dennings character, the Darcy, the friend, I had so much of a problem with her before the movie came out because I went to Comic-Con and Kat Dennings was on the panel and she was exactly that character.
This is such bullshit. You guys realize that these aren't real people, don't you? And
she so didn't want to be there. Even more than the guy sitting next to me that texted through the last half hour of the movie. I felt like she was there as a character for all of these people that think that costumes are lame and that think that yellow spandex line in X-Men is funny and that think that, you know, the chick in the Matrix was hot. You know, just these stupid assholes that ruin movies for me. And I'm a fuddy-duddy. I'm an older person now, which sucks because mentally I'm not.
You're really old if you use the word fuddy-duddy.
Sting did.
Sting is many years older than you are. He was born in the 50s.
dare you. But I read a review where it really hated this Darcy character, the Kat Dennings character. And he said, you know, this was the comic relief black guy that they used to put in movies to comment on everything and make snarky remarks and roll their eyes so that black guys would go to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessary anymore because, you know, a black guy can be the lead. A black guy can be the love interest kind of thing.
So now they need a cool person to do that?
But yeah, the character of Natalie Portman was really sincere
mm-hmm.
and genuine. And I liked her the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess they needed a slacker, loser, geek character. I mean, it's not really the slacker, loser, geek. What's crazy is Natalie Portman was the geek in this movie. She played what Shia LaBeouf plays in Transformers. You know what I mean? The hot girl, the unattainable girl that Shia LaBeouf hooks up with in the Transformers movies was Thor in this. You know what I mean? Isn't that right. weird? That, you know, Portman played a dressed down every lass. You know, she was smart. And so that made her unattractive. And
I'll say, geez, might as well just put glasses on her while you're at it.
You had the ridiculously attractive blonde, but it turned out to be a dude in this case. And I thought that that really worked. I liked Natalie Portman. I wish there had been more of Natalie Portman because when Loki says, oh, she did this to you, that, you know, the human, the mortal, I was just like, wow, how the hell does Loki know this? She hasn't done anything in the last half hour. And I still don't know how he knew. You know what you said about Thor needing this arc of learning his lesson. I felt like the whole romance thing was what was supposed to have changed him.
Uh-huh.
And that they sort of pulled back from that. And I don't know. It's not like it didn't work.
I thought Natalie Portman did a great job in various spots with some of that stuff too.
Well, I thought Natalie Portman did a great job as the girl in the Star Wars prequels, besides the awful dialogue that she was given.
Yeah.
Although, you know, in retrospect, people are right. That romance doesn't work. There's a line that she has
You're
in the first.
You're talking Star Wars, not Thor.
Right. In the prequels, not Star Wars.
Sorry.
That people say that the love story in the latter prequels doesn't work. And yeah, they're right. There's a line in episode 3 where she's like, hold me, Anakin, like you did that day on Naboo or whatever. And it's such an awful line and it sounds so silent film melodramatic that it doesn't ring true at all. It's partly because it's so badly written. You know, there's mm-hmm. 4 or 5 extra words in there that didn't need to be there. It's the equivalent of around the survivors a perimeter create, or clearly our mastery of the force cannot be determined with our use of the force, but through a battle with the lightsaber that was the Jedi weapon down through the centuries. Some awful line like that with 10 times as many words as it needs. And sorry, again, I'm talking about the Star Wars prequels. I felt like the romance, maybe what it was is that there was actual chemistry between Hemsworth and Portman, even though she's the size of a Dalmatian puppy and he's the size of a Mack truck. I felt like, I don't know, there was something with the two of them together that worked for me. And I don't know. I am not a fan of the obligatory love interest in a superhero film, which you've heard me complain about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's necessary. And I know that it's there to check a box the same as a black man with a smart ass used to be for movies in the 80s.
Well, like your friend's wife said, she wouldn't go see that movie without the love interest. So.
Yeah, but
so back to your starting into this, is you were complaining about Darcy. Were you complaining about Darcy? You started to say, I know a lot of people said she was just supposed to be this.
Well, no. For a long time, I was terrified because I was at that Comic-Con panel.
Uh-huh. And she seemed like that.
And they showed scenes from the movie where she acted that way and then Kat Dennings spoke, and there was no respect for the little virgins in the audience that nobody's ever going to love, who had paid a tremendous amount of money to be there to see their heroes and to see comic book people and all that stuff. And I just resented the hell out of that. And there was that earlier Thor trailer that was really Kat Dennings heavy.
And this is from my Facebook page, Pop Tarts. Glad he was freaking me out.
there were four or five Kat Dennings lines in that trailer. And so I was terrified that the movie was going to be all about her and that that was just for the tweens in the audience, or just to show them, hey, we're not taking this seriously, folks. You know, we don't believe a man can fly. So, you know, don't think that we do. Which I hate so, so much. And I railed about it, that one episode. I was so angry. And in the movie, those lines are there. And I don't know if they cut back on them a little bit from initially, the, you know, what we saw at Comic-Con. But the other characters sort of roll their eyes every time that she talks. And there's that line where Natalie Portman's life work has been taken away and Stellan Skarsgård's, all of his research and that. And then she says, oh, and I just put 30 new songs on my iPod and they took it away. And I laughed.
Yeah.
It was funny.
It was really funny too.
Not because
this is all bullshit and you're a stupid, unloved geek sitting in a seat looking at us beautiful people.
But because she was an asshole character. And Natalie Portman says she was the only applicant, you know. It's like they'd rather not be around her. So to me, it was okay. It didn't feel like she was the spokesperson for Generation Y, for Generation Twitter. And so I was okay with her character. It's, the review I read was really angry about it. And they were the ones that made the parallel to the black guy in the 80s movies, which I can totally support.
I support black guys in the 80s too.
No. It just that you can tell a lot of times when a box has been filled. And you used to always call me that I was a bad person because I was upset that there was a female pilot in The Phantom Menace that said,
Roger, gold leader.
After the male pilot said, Roger, gold leader. But that was just horse shit. And it was there to check a box. To say, hey, this is the 21st century almost. We have female pilots now. I don't know. The Hemdial or whatever his name was, the black god, was so cool.
Yeah.
And we talked about that a couple months ago of just people being upset about him having the wrong skin color for a Norse god. The character was just so cool and the actor is so cool that it didn't matter to me. And I don't know if the Asian Norse god is Asian in the comics or they made him Asian to check a box. But it bothers me when they do the box checking thing.
Yeah, I was really upset that they made Beta Ray Bill a Schlark Flargian instead of a Korn Fergany.
Oh, sir, you have truly put me in my place. You mentioned after the movie, well, do you think that they'll bring Beta Ray Bill in a sequel? It's possible. I'd love to see them do it. But I'd love to see them do it with a guy in a suit, not rely on CG.
They won't.
The fact that those frost giants were dudes, were actors, made them matter to me more.
Uh-huh.
When you see all that CG in the Green Lantern trailer, and that not only is Kilowog CG, but Tomar Ray is CG, and you know, some of these people that are just people but with a different color head or whatever, it is just, okay, we need there to be more CG because that's popular, and that I don't know.
They want people to confuse it for one of those DreamWorks animated pictures. They're hoping.
I don't know. To me, what mattered in the trailer for Green Lantern was when the characters spoke and you sort of got an idea of what the character is going to be like, what the character arcs, what the interaction with the characters are. When Sinestro is doing tough love on Hal Jordan, that's something I'm looking forward to seeing. A guy who's trying to teach him, you know, what the real world is like and how to be a real Green Lantern. And he does it in a really rough, mean-spirited way. That's interesting to me. And when Tomar Ray spoke, or I think they're calling him Tomar Ree in the movie, and it was in Jeffrey Rush's voice, suddenly I was like, oh, cool. But because Jeffrey Rush has a cool voice. I don't know. I don't understand the CG costume and all that stuff. It's not necessary. You've seen Ryan Reynolds without his shirt on in a movie before, right? You know that the guy is super buff and all that stuff. Why would you need a CG costume over that? You could put Lycra or spandex or whatever on the guy. And because he's actually in a physical shape like a comic book character, he should look great, right? I
don't know.
I don't know either. I can tell I've talked your ear off, but We got to have this get us to June. So I'm just...
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, it is an hour and a half. Gets My Goats are generally like 20 minutes, aren't they? That should get us to freaking September.
Oh, you monster. All right. Well, hey, I hope that people found this conversation interesting. If not, then they're probably not listening because this is the end. And yeah, that's fine.
If not, they're probably not listeners because it's pretty much the same stuff we do every time.
No, that's dead on. Well, it's kind of like the – do you remember the Fruity Odie Bar commercial?
Yeah.
And it went, Fruity Odie Bar, make a man out of a mouse. Fruity Odie Bar makes you burst out of your blouse. And then this huge disclaimer, not mandatory, came up on the commercial just to show how effed up this future society is. Yeah, that gets my goat is not mandatory.
Not mandatory, but bursting out of your blouse, incidentally, is mandatory. So if you listen to the show, you must burst out of your blouse.
Hear, hear.
And take a picture and email it to us.
Aw. Well, hey, I really enjoyed this conversation, mostly because you just sat there and let me talk. If you want me to be happy. I'm kind of like a woman that way, huh?
Oh.
It's like she doesn't care about how your day was. She wants you to ask her how hers went. And for the last time, I guess I've been Rich Apfel.
Apparently so. All the hate mail will start rolling in now. And now for the hate letter of the week. All right, see you later, folks.
Bye.
That Gets My Goat is produced under a Creative Commons 3.0 license for some reason.
Guilty.